Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, those are a couple of fantastic finishes for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Tony, but that's all the David Garrard you get today. Holiday season has kicked in for Dave. He's been on a little extended holiday, hasn't he, the last few weeks? But he's out today, and we won't have a show next Thursday and Friday. Somebody might have a show in this time slot, but you and I will have the day off with the Thanksgiving holiday coming up. Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday to you. It's brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Jaguars today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Here's what one of the things I like about Dave Caldwell. I like a lot of things about Dave Caldwell, but I do think he's a straight shooter, Tony. You know, we were just discussing Blake Bortles in a number of facets of his game, and he'll flat out acknowledge, hey, you know what, Tennessee, probably the worst game he played in his career. There's nothing good about that. You look at the Oakland film, there's nothing really particularly good about that. But then he'll say, you know, look, at the same time, he was the most efficient quarterback on third down in the National Football League last week. It does get overshadowed, certainly because you throw a pick six, which is another one. You miss a couple of deep balls, and he says that's fair. But at the same time, you know what? You throw a couple of shots down the field that result in pass interference. They're perfectly thrown balls, and all the defender could do is interfere with Marquise Lee. You don't get credit for those, and that's a fair way to look at it. I'm willing to put it this way. I'm willing to view Blake with an open mind for the final 7 weeks of the season. You know, I do feel like there are a lot of people that have made up their mind on Blake Bortles, and that's fine. It's your prerogative. You can feel however you like about it, you know, because in the end, how I feel, how Tony feels, how you feel isn't really going to matter all that much. But I do, I hope people at least approach the final seven games with an open mind. You may feel like, hey, you know what, I've seen enough from Gus Bradley, and that's your prerogative. Let's just see what happens on the field, and I know that's tough for a lot of people to swallow, because they say, what do you expect to be any different than we've seen? We've been hearing this. Let's see what happens. We heard this all last season, and that's fair. But we're in the midst of this season. You know, all the talk about what are we going to do at the quarterback position? Is there someone we could draft? Is there a veteran we could get like Tony Romo? We hear the conversations. I heard Dan and Jeff talk about it this morning. We talked about it yesterday. We're not naive to what's being said out there, but none of that can take place for the next 7 weeks, until the next 7 weeks pass, at least. And then, you know, even at that point, you're going to have to evaluate where things stand. So I guess that's all I'm trying to say is approach the second half of the season, if you can, kind of as a blank slate and see where it takes us.
Look, I think a lot of fans, and understandably so, they're 2-7. They're not going anywhere in the 2016 season. So they've decided that every bit of conversation they want to have about this football team is what's going to happen in January with this football team. And the realistic view is they have to play seven more games. And they have a guy that they spent the number 3 overall draft pick on a couple of years ago that has not played well enough in the first half of this season to incite any kind of confidence from most of the fans. There's questions about what he's going to be going forward that I think everyone thought were going to be answered by this point in the 2016 season. There was a confidence that Blake Bortles was going to look like the franchise quarterback in this season. He hasn't yet.
Correct.
And look, I get it that a lot of fans out there, when you say, you hear something along the lines of, look, he made the two throws that drew the pass interference. They were just off the mark on the long pass to Allen Hurns and Marquise Lee. All these different things that could have gone right. Well, they didn't. Right. And for the fans, I get that that's the bottom line is, yes, if he had made one of those throws to Hurns or Lee, you'd be sitting there saying that a pretty good day for Blake Bortles. He would have thrown 3 touchdowns and probably 300 yards, and they might have won the football game if he hits one of those throws. But he didn't. And if fans want to fall back constantly on the, but he didn't, well, he's not giving them a reason not to yet.
That's fair.
And he's got 7 games left to try to change that kind of narrative among the fan base. I think there's more confidence in the building that he's closer to good than bad than a lot of fans would want to believe right now.
I think that's fair as well. And I think when you don't get the results in the win-loss column, it's easy to overlook any possible good that he could have had.
As we've learned when we've tried to ask positive questions and people scream at us.
Right. There are players that have played well on this team this year. That doesn't mean the team as a whole has played well. But at the same time, doesn't mean we have to wallow in all the negative 24 hours a day, or in our case, 2 hours a day, every single day, Monday through Friday, until the rest of the season is over. As Dave Caldwell put it, the difference between the Lions and the Jags is not much. They've found a way. They've won the similar games that the Jags have lost by a single possession.
Yeah.
Right? They have made those last plays in the final couple minutes of games, and that is a big difference. Let's be clear about that. It's not just, wow, they had a couple different plays, and it's when they happen, it's can you consistently make them. So that is a difference, and that the Lions didn't luckily win these games. They made the plays to win these games.
Yeah, they beat Baltimore, Kansas City, and Houston, basically. Those three games the Jaguars found a way to lose are the games that Detroit
and
found
Minnesota.
A way to win.
Yeah. I mean, right. They could have easily lost a bunch of these games and been having a season just like Jacksonville, but
they didn't.
Their quarterback has been performing in crunch time, and that is a significant difference, and we certainly understand that. But what that creates then as well is that belief that, hey, we're down with 3 minutes to go. Not that we can win this game, but we're going to win this game because
yep.
we've been there, we've done that. Whereas I've gotten to wonder if the players on the Jags, you see an early pick six, how much does, you know, for how, what period of time does that set you back emotionally in that game? Maybe it didn't a ton because the Jags,
they bounced right back.
They did bounce right back.
The one that it felt like killed them was the Hearns overthrow. You could feel everything deflate.
That should have been six.
Yeah, in that moment when it should have been six and it turns into a punt, right? Like, and you could feel everything in the building kind of go, oh, he's really not going to hit that throw today. Like, you could almost feel the reaction from that. And then Houston punted the ball back to him. That was, the sequence where on the first down from inside their own end, they had the blitz that came off that right side of the offense. It got to Blake Bortles. He grazed the face mask. Should have been a flag. Wasn't. Turned out to be a sack. They punt the ball back, get the big punt return. And then now they're down two scores in that football game. That was all in that same kind of sequence of events, and you could feel just no confidence from the offense after they missed that big play to Allen Hurns. So hopefully they can bounce back from those kind of things in the second halves of these games. Or how about Blake just hit that throw? Whatever needs
That'd
to happen,
good.
hit that throw, and it's kind of a moot point at that point.
All right, we'll have Michael Rothstein joining us coming up in about 10 minutes or so from ESPN's NFL Nation coverage of the Detroit Lions. So we'll get the story behind why they've been so successful during the final few minutes of games this year, why they've been able to pull out close victories. Got this from the Jags PR department about 40 minutes ago coming in. This is all the latest on Telvin Smith. Since Telvin Smith has reported back for today's meetings and walkthrough at Everbank Field, Telvin Smith will not be available to the media today, but the PR staff will do their best to answer any questions we have regarding the situation in this weekend's game. We appreciate your understanding regarding this situation. I totally get it. He doesn't need, you know, he's processing his own set of emotions right now. He doesn't have to deal, you know, I'm sure he'll speak with the media at the appropriate time. And whether he chooses to address his personal life is his personal business, quite frankly. You know, we're happy to have him back. Telvin's a hardworking guy, and I would imagine he's going to play this week. And there's no telling how he's going to react, right? We saw Brett Favre. After his father passed away, had one of the great games of his career. We've seen other guys that when you're emotionally spent, you can get mentally spent. It can have a physical toll on you as well. So fortunately for the Jags, if they needed to, they've got Miles Jack who can man the weak side as well. But it looks to me, with Telvin being back for walkthroughs today, Tony, that he's going to play against the Detroit Lions. And I think it's significant because when you look at how the Lions run offensively, they don't have much of a running game per se. The running game, in great part, is a short passing game with Theo Riddick coming out of the backfield primarily, Justin Forsett from time to time as well. But they like to get these guys out in space, and speedy linebackers will play a big role in slowing down Theo Riddick, in my opinion, coming up this weekend.
Yeah, and look, I think it's one of those weeks where if Detroit's running the ball, you're dead.
I think that's true anytime you play the Lions.
It's another one of those weeks, though, for the Jags where, look, this is, again, a team that's supposed to take that kind of thing away. They didn't do a fantastic job of that last week. Brock Osweiler was basically a non-factor in that football game, but the running game for Houston wasn't. It was effective when it needed to be effective. They got the big run down to the one-yard line, the run on third and 16, so they couldn't take away the run when they needed to in the football game last week. If you have those kind of struggles against Detroit, when you're not playing a guy like Brock Osweiler at the quarterback position, instead you're getting Matt Stafford, who seems to be clicking on all cylinders. If Detroit can run the ball, you're in big, big trouble this weekend. So don't let that get started. Just get that off the rails quick in this football game and hopefully establish a little bit of a running game of your own so that you don't have to watch your quarterback throw it 45 times a game anymore.
Exactly. The returns have not been what you've wanted them to be when you put it in the air that often. All right, we'll step aside. We'll take a break for the first time this morning. Just kind of feeling like we're running behind just because we got the late start, but we're on time as far as the radio is concerned, so I guess check mark for us. Michael Rothstein coming up from ESPN's NFL Nation coverage of the Detroit Lions. Today's question of the day brought to you by our friends at the Tom Bush Family Dealerships. Don't forget that new BMW dealership opens up in January. Tyler, we'll wait on that. Your keys to victory going up against the Detroit Lions this weekend for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Share your thoughts with us on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Of course, you can hit us up on the phone lines after the bottom of the hour at 641-1010. That's also the text line driven by Duval Ford. We'll be back with Michael Rothstein, ESPN's NFL Nation coverage of the Detroit Lions as we kick off a Friday here. Brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, we continue along on this Friday morning here on Jaguars Today. Jags heading up to the Motor City to take on the Detroit Lions this weekend. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you, and joined now by Michael Rothstein, ESPN's NFL Nation coverage of the same Detroit Lions. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? This is very Jacksonville-like weather we've got in Detroit. It's like 70 degrees right now.
Nice, man.
Late November. Yeah, oh, I'll take it.
That's fantastic. We got a high of 80 coming tomorrow, and then it's going to drop down a little bit after that. But unseasonably,
it's supposed to get into like the 40s overnight the next couple of days.
Yeah, we'll live though. We'll live. Michael, speaking of warm or hot, as the case may be, Matt Stafford really started last year, took a major leap forward in terms of accuracy. His completion percentage was a career best. He's even up from that just a smidge this year. Touchdowns are high. Interceptions are very low. He's got him winning football games. Did the light come on, to use a cliche, for Matt Stafford in some capacity last year? Why have the last season and a half been so good for him?
It all starts with Jim Bob Cooter, the offensive coordinator / best name in sports / SEC folk hero who never really played in the game.
No doubt.
It all starts with him because when they promoted him to offensive coordinator, he sees football the same way as Matthew Stafford as far as just what they're looking for, what they like, what they try to run. And as Jim Bob Cooter has installed his offense more and more, it fit what Matthew Stafford's strengths are. And that has been a huge key for Stafford. He's not throwing the ball down the field nearly as much as he used to. He used to take deep shots all the time with Calvin Johnson. You rarely see that now because Calvin Johnson's dancing with the stars and he's got Marvin Jones instead. Marvin Jones is not Calvin Johnson. He'll be the first person to tell you that. That's who they go to deep balls with, but that's not happening as much. They're working a lot of short passes. Short passes are happy passes. You see a lot of Golden Tate, a lot of Theo Riddick. But more than anything else, he's just making good decisions, and he's just throwing to the guy who is open. He doesn't care who it is. So there are times where you see Marvin Jones with 10 targets a game, and sometimes it's three, so or four. So that's really why Matthew Stafford has been so good. It's part Jim Bob Cooter, part he's just, for the maybe the first time in his career, just throwing to the guy he sees that's open.
You know, next week it's Thanksgiving, obviously. Detroit gets put on that national stage every year on Thanksgiving Day. This year even bigger with them being tied for first place in the division with the team that they're playing next week in the Minnesota Vikings. Is there any look-ahead effect with a 2-7 Jaguars team coming into Detroit this weekend to what's going to be happening there in the city on Thursday?
I don't think so, because for two reasons. One, they play Thanksgiving every year. So this type of turnaround, and they always play a pretty big opponent, too. They play Green Bay, they play Chicago. So this type of turnaround against a divisional opponent is nothing new to the Lions as a franchise, nothing new to Matthew Stafford, to Jim Caldwell, to really anyone who's been here longer than a season. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, you got to remember, this team was 1-3 after the first 4 weeks of the season. So they realize how thin their margin is, especially because they've been down the last 90 seconds or so, or not last 90 seconds, but they've been trailing in the fourth quarter in every game they've played this year. So they understand what that margin is. So I don't think that's an issue where they're going to get caught looking ahead against Jacksonville to Minnesota. I think if they struggle on Sunday, it's because Jacksonville finally finds something that I think a lot of people around the country thought they would have this year, but clearly they haven't.
No, they clearly haven't. What they've had
not at all.
No. What they've had is, and we've wondered down here, you know, they get off to slow starts, Michael. They had a pick six last week. How much that can deflate a team? Meanwhile, on the Detroit side of the ledger, I've got to believe having trailed in every fourth quarter this year and still of at least recently finding ways to pull out these games, that's got to build an increasing belief in their team that no matter what situation they face, not only can they, but they got to feel like they will win these football games now. And that can go a long way.
Oh, no doubt. I've talked to multiple players on the offensive side of the ball, not even on the defensive side, but a lot of the offensive linemen, Matthew Stafford himself, all said the same thing. If they are getting the ball with time left on the clock in a situation where they can win a game, they believe they're going to win the game. And that's something that you haven't always been able to say about the Lions. And that's also something that you haven't always been able to say about Matthew Stafford. Because if anything, you in the past thought, okay, they have the ball chance to win the game. How are they going to mess this up? I mean, that's the history of the Lions, right? The Lions and the Browns. That's their history. This team is different because they have done it over and over again. Every time they've won a game this year is because Matthew Stafford and the offense have led a game-winning drive in the fourth quarter or overtime, typically late in the fourth quarter, as you saw against Minnesota. And how they do that is, A, they have complete confidence in Matthew Stafford, and B, Jim Caldwell puts them through a gamut of scenarios in practice every week. And I spent a good portion of time after they beat Minnesota asking them, well, what does that actually do? Because, you know, the old Allen Iverson adage is just practice. You know, practice, we're talking about practice. But in the Lions situation, Caldwell gives them scenarios where they have 36 seconds to drive 80 yards to score a touchdown, and they have one timeout or no timeouts. And he does that every week. He tries to find the most insane scenarios he can find in college or pro football and then put his team in that. And that is part of the reason why they've been so good at that and part of why they have that offense.
The Lions are one of the few teams in the NFL that are worse at running the football than the Jacksonville Jaguars. Somehow they're 5-4. Do the Lions, and I ask this a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but do the Lions even want to run the football? I mean, with the personnel they have back there, obviously not any big bruising-type guys in that running game right now with Theo Riddick and Dwayne Washington, really the two lead guys. But what about the Lions' running game? Is that something they commit to, or do they get away from it early?
Sure, they'd like to run the football. Every team would like to run the football. Well, maybe not Texas Tech or Washington State, but other than that, every team would like to run the football. But, no, they'll sometimes pass to sit up the run. They'll run some draws with Theo Riddick to maybe get him in space, to get the defense playing back. They'll do some stuff with Dwayne Washington and Zach Ezener. But this is a pass-first team. This is a pass-second team. And this is a team that will run when they can, but they realize where their strength is. And they realize that almost all of their backs have pass-catching ability, and that's part of what makes them really dangerous. I think if they still had Amir Abdullah, who's on IR with a foot injury, if they still had him, I think you might see more of a running attack. Because when they did have him, they were quite good on the ground. They slashed through Indianapolis in the first week of the year. They were running pretty well against Tennessee until Abdullah got hurt. And that really changed everything because Theo Riddick, as dynamic as a pass catcher and a PPR demon in fantasy he may be, he's not a run-first running back. He's always been a pass-first running back. He was a wide receiver for a while in college. So they're just playing to what they have and their strengths. And I think that that's part of the reason why they're not running as well. And lastly with that, Jim Caldwell has never had a good running team, ever, in the NFL. If you go back and look in his 3 years in Indianapolis, you go back and even look a little bit in Baltimore when he was the offensive coordinator, it's always been a passing thing with Jim Caldwell. So that's historically what he's done anyway.
Michael, quick look at the other side of the football for you guys. Ziggy Ansah had been a focal point really over the last several years with his pass rush, and he's been dealing with a bad ankle this year. He's only played in six games, yet to record a sack. How healthy is he right now, and can he get it turned on in the second half of the season?
Well, he's been limited in practice again this week, and that is some cause of concern. That said, expect him to play on Sunday, and he is getting healthier. I think that a lot of people are surprised by Ansel's lack of production, myself included. And I can't really pinpoint the reason why. He just remember, when he missed three games, it was really four because he got hurt the third play against Tennessee, second play against Tennessee, something like that, is on that first series. So he was out for essentially four games. You're out for almost half the season. It's obviously going to hurt your numbers. Plus, there have been a lot of times lately where he's been close, and then Kerry Hyder or Armonte Bryant before that have cleaned up what Ansah has tried to do, so they get credit for the sack. But, yeah, it's surprising that his numbers are there. I expect he's going to have a big game here at some point in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And if it's not Sunday against Jacksonville, Minnesota's offensive line continues to be beat up and continues to just lose guys left and right. So if I'm Ziggy Ansah, I'm looking at these next 2 weeks and saying, man, I got to get some sort of production going here. Because otherwise, if that doesn't happen, then I think you really have cause for concern as to what's going on.
From a distance, it would seem like DeAndre Levy would be one of the most interesting guys in the NFL to cover. One of the most outspoken, obviously, the comments that he had earlier this week about Joe Paterno calling him a dirtbag and feeling very proud of himself for breaking his leg.
I agree. Not on the leg, but the dirtbag.
But what is it like to be in a locker room with DeAndre Levy?
Levy's not in the locker room much these days because he's hurt, but I've gotten to know DeAndre a little bit. I wrote a story, actually, last week. I had dinner with Levy and his girlfriend for about 3 hours last month, and we talked a lot about his social activism with fighting domestic violence and sexual assault. And, yeah, he is simply one of the most interesting people I've ever covered. I'm 36 years old. I've been in this for 15 years. He's probably on a handful of guys that I'm like, that guy is just really fascinating to me. He's his own man. He's his own thinker. I mean, that's how his parents put it to me as well. And the crazy thing about DeAndre Levy is that no one saw this coming. And I asked his parents pretty bluntly, is this something you could have seen, like, as a kid, like, was he, you know, outspoken? And they're like, no, not at all. You know, they had no idea that this was going to be the way their son was going to go. And obviously they're really proud of him for that and for taking stands against social causes and social issues that he finds interesting and deems important. And this has been his way for about 18 months. I encourage people to go back. And I know a lot of the attention is on that Men's Journal story right now because of what he said about Joe Paterno and, you know, what he said about CTE, which he has said before to both myself and the Detroit Free Press back in March when he started challenging the NFL. But I encourage people to go read the story I wrote last week about him because it tries to explain his path from really being a guy who only cared about himself and being silent to being this outspoken social activist. He kind of hates the word activist, is a description of him. He looks at himself as just a voice that, you know, eventually going to pass it on to somebody else when his platform kind of disappears when he leaves the NFL. But his path has really been interesting as to why he's done it. And it really all started in earnest when he hurt his hip 18 months ago. And that is really what started all of this now, not 18 months ago, like 14, 15 months ago. That really started this path to where he has a massive amount of, he takes more time than a lot of people to fight these social causes. He raised over $30,000 to test neglected rape kits in Detroit. And then because those rape kits, there were 11,000 of them when that project started 5 years ago, they're almost all tested now. And now they're thinking his money is going to be able to fund an investigator for a year to find to take the evidence that was found in those rape kits and then find those people, and they hope lead to conviction. And, I mean, that's just something that on a human level, on a real person level, I think is pretty outstanding.
That's awesome. DeAndre Levy is going to be one of my new favorite players to at least follow and see what he's up to.
I would just say any time anyone asks me about Levy and I start to talk about him, that's the same reaction, both, you know, on the radio, when I'm just talking to people in general, like when my friends of mine are asking, what are you up to? What have you been writing? I tell them that. They're like, wow, that guy sounds like, you know, he's a different breed of NFL player. He also wonders why more NFL players aren't like him. And he talks about that in a story I wrote on ESPN.com last week as well. So I think he would like to see more guys take stands on issues, and that's been such a big thing for him, really, like I said, the past year and a half. And he definitely started becoming more outspoken this past offseason. Then he wrote an essay for the Players Tribune. And it's really kind of all gone from there. And I know I'm selling my own work. It's chilling my own work here a little bit. But I fully admit that. But I think it's a story worth reading, and I think that a lot of people would probably get something out of it. Even though he's not playing right now, I don't expect him to play Sunday. I think he'll come back next week. But he's practicing now, and it seems like he's on the mend. He's gotten a – I know I'm talking a lot right now about this, but, yeah, he's gotten a rough deal of it lately in Detroit because ever since he signed his extension, he's been hurt. He's had a tough run of injuries. But, man, he wants to play, too. Like, he's really – excited to get back on the field, and it'll be really interesting to see what happens when he does, because I think it changes the dynamic of their defense.
Well, if he wants to take the weekend off, we like him that much more.
So.
we'll take whatever we can get, Michael. Hey, listen, man, I really enjoyed the conversation. That's some interesting stuff about DeAndre Levy, and we will be rooting for him from afar. And appreciate the time this morning, man. Enjoy the game. Enjoy the rest of the season. It seems like it's been a fun one to this point for Detroit.
Oh, it's definitely been interesting. Anytime, guys. You have a great day.
You too. Thanks so much. Michael Rothstein, ESPN's NFL Nation coverage of the Detroit Lions. I did not know all that about DeAndre Levy. Forget players in the National Football League, Tony. How many people would do something like that? That is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That he would put his own personal funds into investigating all these unsolved rape cases up in Detroit. That's pretty darn cool, to be quite frank with you. So he's got a new fan down here, at least, and I doubt I'm the only one after hearing that. And again, particularly since he wants to take the weekend off. He doesn't want to, but he looks like he'll take the weekend off. It makes it that much easier to root for DeAndre Levy going forward here. Can we not have Ziggy Ansah become Ziggy Ansah this weekend, too? Can we put that off for one more week?
Or hopeful.
4 or 5 more days till Thanksgiving, as the case may be. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Phone lines open when we come back on the other side. If you'd like to get on board at 641-1010, discuss anything you heard Michael Rothstein say, any aspect of Jaguars football, it's all out there. The question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, is just simply give us your 3 keys to victory for the Jags, getting win number 3 this weekend against the Detroit Lions. Jaguars Today rolls on, live from Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
You pull for him, you know, because he did have such an impact. And, you know, I don't know if part of it is the charity part, but he does so much good in our community, too, as well. So, you know, I think it'd be cool if he got, received that honor.
That is Gus Bradley on the self-titled Gus Bradley Show yesterday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM, discussing the Hall of Fame candidacy of one Tony Boselli, as Jack Del Rio once described him, Tony Boselli. But Tony Boselli is back in the spotlight. Tony, as he called the game last night, by the way, on Westwood One on Thursday Night Football.
Mm-hmm.
He's back out there with a chance, and it seems like maybe not a completely unrealistic chance to get into Canton, Ohio. Whether it's this year, it seems like there's some momentum for him right now. And one of the reasons I say that, you probably heard Jordan DeArmond reporting on this over the last couple of days, that Tony is a semifinalist for the process. But in addition to that, Gil Brandt, who's really the godfather of the NFL draft, works for NFL.com. to this day, and SiriusXM NFL Radio, where he hosts a couple of different things. And he's got Tony as the 6th most qualified candidate in his mind on this year's semifinal list to get into the Hall of Fame. And you often get 6 guys in to the Hall of Fame, Tony, and then a couple from the Veterans Committee on top of that as well for
right.
a potential of 8. Just running through some of the candidates, the ones he has listed ahead of Tony – LaDainian Tomlinson, he has number 1.
Yeah.
I think LT, is to me, is a no-brainer Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah.
Terrell Owens, who, again, to me, is a no-brainer Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I was surprised last year when Marvin Harrison got in ahead of him.
I was, too.
Honestly.
I was, too. And, I think there's a bit of a wait-your-turn mode at the wide receiver position. Not that they'd keep Jerry Rice out. Or make him wait behind a guy like Andre Reed or anything like that. But there has been a bit of that in recent years. Like, Marvin Harrison didn't get in immediately. you're going to have to, you know, he's going to get in, then you'll get in. Look, T.O.'s going to get into the Hall of Fame, whether it's this year or not. It should be this year. It should have been immediately, in my opinion. Kurt Warner, who I would vote for the Hall of Fame. Again, this is, you know, I get it. He had a down period in the middle of his career, but you talk about the Hall of Fame. To me, the Hall of Fame isn't just about the pure numbers that you pile up. Clearly, if you look at some of the people that are in there, Joe Namath being a prime example of that. But I couldn't picture a Professional Football Hall of Fame without Joe Namath. I don't want to picture one without Kurt Warner either. I think he was fantastic on both ends of his career. League MVP, won a Super Bowl, took another franchise to a Super Bowl. So I'd be on board with his candidacy. John Lynch, who he has ranked fourth here. Frankly, I always thought Lynch was a little bit overrated. People rave about him. Maybe I'm the guy who's wrong here. He was a 9-time Pro Bowler, and I think he's well thought of in NFL circles. I think if you ask me, who would you rather have on your team, John Lynch or Tony Boselli, it's a pretty easy answer for me, and it's Boselli, right? And then you've got the last one ahead of Boselli, another great Jaguar, Torrey Holt.
Could they
get two Jags into the Hall of Fame? That would be pretty awesome, actually, if they did. Torrey Holt. Gil Brandt wrote it up, the first-round pick posted six consecutive seasons of 1,300-plus yards receiving, finished his career with over 13,000, which was 16th all-time, 74 receiving touchdowns, a classic route runner with great hands. Holt and Isaac Bruce essentially functioned as the number one and number 1A receivers in St. Louis, both deserving of spots in the Hall. However, the edge goes to Holt. He's got Boselli then at six, the second overall pick in the 95 NFL draft, allowed 15 and a half sacks over 7 years in Jacksonville.
Jeez.
Give you two a season. We'll let you get beat twice a season, Tony. I mean, we've seen that in games here many times over the years and elsewhere around the National Football League. That's pretty phenomenal. That translates to fewer sacks allowed per play, says Gil Brandt, than Hall of Famers Orlando Pace, Randall McDaniel, Gary Zimmerman, and Willie Rofe. Boselli named to 5 Pro Bowls and was part of a Jaguars team that went to the playoffs in 4 of his first 5 years of existence, with 2 of those trips ending in the AFC title game. Anybody watch Tony play? I think the momentum is there. I think Tony Boselli will ultimately be enshrined in Canton, Ohio. I don't know if it's going to be this year.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be this year or not either. But look, and I think for a lot of fans out there across the country, it's probably going to come as a bit of a shock when Tony does get in. Like, who is this guy and why is he getting into the Hall
right.
of Fame?
Jaguars suck, man.
And I think when you talk to the guys who played the position that he played, and we're talking about some of the greats of all time. I mean, Anthony Munoz, every time we see him, it's not that he just says it here. He says it everywhere he gets asked. Who's the best offensive tackle that you've seen?
Ever.
Ever. He says Tony Boselli. And he doesn't just say it when he's interviewed by people in Jacksonville. He says it when he's interviewed by people in Cincinnati, in Detroit, all over the country. He thinks Tony Boselli is the best offensive lineman to ever suited up in this league. That's the kind of praise that the guy who is considered the best to have ever done it in this league heaps upon the guy that played here in Jacksonville. I get the career was short. There's been guys with shorter careers, played less football games, that have gotten into the Hall of Fame. Look, 5 Pro Bowls, 3 All-Pro seasons, and one of those basically when he was coming off a torn ACL was pretty incredible. And that's the career that Tony Boselli had here in Jacksonville.
It never was a question of level of play. It was just the length of career, and that's all it came down to. And Tony's shoulder betrayed him, but he never betrayed the investment that this team made in him.
No, and at some point, him not having a 2-year longer career, I mean, how long can that be held against you? Like when you played at the level that he played, I mean, it's not being held against Gale Sayers. It's not being held against Stevenson. At some point, you were as good as you were, and there needs to be some recognition of how good Tony Boselli was.
Here are the players that didn't make the cut down to the semifinal list. These are the guys just on the outside looking in, and this is how Gil Brandt ranks them from top to bottom. Isaac Bruce, he thought was the best of those who got left out of the semifinals this year. Jason Taylor, speaking of another pretty prominent player in our era here, Tony Boselli matched up with Jason Taylor and came out the better for it. Hines Ward, former Super Bowl MVP.
It's his first year, right?
Hines?
In his first year of
eligibility?
I think
it is, because, his last season was 2011, so this is his first year of eligibility. All-time leading receiver, though, for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Certainly times have changed, and I get that. I could see Hines Ward getting into the Hall of Fame one day. Chris Hinton, who was a very good offensive lineman, primarily for the Colts, but also for the Falcons. Back in the day, as he ended his career with the Minnesota Vikings. Jimmy Johnson, Super Bowl winning coach with the Dallas Cowboys, Darren Woodson, the all-time leading tackler for the Dallas Cowboys, Kevin Mawai, excellent offensive lineman with Seattle and the New York Jets, Mike Ken, another offensive tackle with the Atlanta Falcons. I think he spent his entire career with them. Carl Mecklenburg of the Broncos, linebacker from the 80s into the mid-90s. Roger Craig, who was a big part of San Francisco winning Super Bowls in the 1980s. And then Clay Matthews, the linebacker for the Browns and the Atlanta Falcons. Those are guys who didn't make the cut. Guys who are on the ballot this year with Tony continuing forward. Edgerrin James, Don Coryell, Ty Law, Alan Faneca, Brian Dawkins, Steve Atwater, Joe Jacoby, Terrell Davis, Morton Anderson, another great Jaguar right there. You got and the guys I've already listed that Gil Brandt lists as what he thinks are stronger candidates than Tony.
I was just looking at this list again, and you know, the guys that are most likely to get in, they usually try to match up in the Hall of Fame game the fan bases from some of the guys that are getting in, so it's like an easy trip for those fans to kind of trek up to Canton, you know, and then they're staying around for the game. So if Tony got in, it would make a lot of sense for the Jaguars to be in the Hall of Fame game again, because they haven't been in it since their inaugural season. It'd be the first guy going in.
Be a lot of excitement.
So I could see that happening. It's trying to figure out what other team they would take, right? Because the number one guy on the list is Tomlinson, and there's a possibility that team's moving to L.A. So are they going to bring the Chargers as they're moving to do the Canton thing? I don't know how likely that is. Terrell played all over the place, so what is he really?
Right.
What would he even go in as? Kurt Warner, it's kind of the same thing. The team that he really led is now in L.A.
Right, but it's still I would still think the Rams are what I think of when I think of Kurt Warner.
Sure, but not the fans he played in front of for all those years and won a Super Bowl for. Lynch probably makes the most sense with all the time that he spent down there in Tampa. So I guess if the guys that he has on this list are correct, that I could see Lynch, maybe the Jags and the Buccaneers. If Torrey Holt got in too, maybe
inter-squad
it is the Rams.
Scrimmage, maybe if Torrey gets in.
But if Torrey got in, maybe it is the Rams, because it could be Torrey and Kurt in the same Hall of Fame class, which would be kind of cool to watch those guys talk on top of each other about that kind of era in Rams football.
And Isaac Bruce would be like, remember that bomb I caught for a touchdown in that Super Bowl? Remember all those yards and catches and all that stuff?
Mm. Well, they'd both stand up there and say, Isaac needs to be in here next.
Hey, if you want Jimmy Smith eventually in the Hall of Fame, be an Isaac Bruce fan. Mm-hmm. Because Isaac Bruce has got a better case. He just does. And I love you, Jimmy, but Isaac Bruce needs to be in first. And so the fact that he's on the outside looking in, it's going to delay that process a little bit longer. But once Boselli gets in, I think he will, whether it's this year or whenever, as we said, I think then the rest of football will start to take a longer look at that era here in Jacksonville and say, are we overlooking anybody else? Can Jimmy Smith ultimately get in? Could Fred Taylor ultimately get in? I think those are your two candidates out there in addition to Tony Boselli. Not quite on this kind of radar yet, and even in the discussion. And heck, Fred not even eligible yet for the Hall of Fame, right? I mean, how long's Fred been out of the league? When was this last year when he played a little bit with New England?
Was that 12?
Was it? I want to say he's got to wait another year to get in. If that's 12, then that makes sense. Yeah. And we'll have to start having that discussion on Freddie T in the future. But good luck to Tony. We'd like to see him get there. If I'm a betting man, I'm going to say he doesn't get in this time, because sometimes that process is you got to keep knocking on the door for a few years until it becomes more of the normal part of conversation, that it becomes almost an eventuality that you think you're going to get in.
Was 10, so Fred
is eligible. All right, well, Fred is eligible then. My bad on that one. I thought it was a little bit later that he went and finished up with the New England Patriots. All right. Anyway, that's that for the Hall of Fame semifinalist list. Coming up in a little bit, we'll hear from Nathaniel Hackett and Gus Bradley, both speaking yesterday with the Jaguars getting ready to take on the Detroit Lions coming up this weekend. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank, coming back with this Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL. Friday's brought to you by Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, go back to November 18th, 1990. Art Monk became only the third player in NFL history to amass how many career receptions on this date at that time?
1,000.
700. Doesn't that show you how times have changed, man? Because guys have blown past that. He made four catches on that particular day against the New Orleans Saints. A bevy of high-profile birthdays, Tony, including Jack Tatum, known as the assassin for the Raiders back in the day, 68 years old. Did Jack Tatum just pass away recently? I want to say he did. I didn't see that denoted, but he was born in this state in 1948. I'll look that up here in a second. Three-time Pro Bowler. He, of course, delivered the hit that paralyzed Daryl Stingley and never really seemed all that repentant about it the rest of the way. I believe Jack Tatum passed away about 2 or 3 years ago, because I think we've had that discussion. 1956 on this date, Warren Moon came into the world, NFL quarterback. First of all, a CFL quarterback, won some Grey Cups, and a nine-time Pro Bowler in the league, Hall of Fame inductee in 2006. He was the 1989 NFL Walter Payton Man of the Year Award winner and the 1990 NFL Associated Press Offensive Player of the Year. Born in the state in 1963, former defensive back, primarily for the Redskins, now the head coach of the New York Jets, Todd Bowles, turns 53 years old today. Born in the state in 1964, Seth Joyner, three-time Pro Bowl linebacker, primarily for the Philadelphia Eagles, 52 years old. Rocket Ishmael is 47 today, born in the state in 1969. And former Jaguar tight end, Greg Estandia. The only time he gets mentioned in this company is when it is November 18th. Happy 34th to Greg. Did you find...
Yeah, he passed away in July of 2010.
All right, so it's been a little while now for Jack Tatum, but he was born in this date back in 1948, and that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Less than on Thursday Night Football, guys, the Panthers held off the Saints' comeback attempt. New Orleans scored 17 points in the fourth quarter to bring it to a 23-20 game, and that was the final last night in Charlotte. Both the Saints and Panthers now sit at 4-6 overall in the 2016 season. Carolina Panthers middle linebacker Luke Kuechly was very emotional as he was carted off the field late in the fourth quarter and was being evaluated for concussion. He took a helmet-to-helmet hit from Saints running back Tim Hightower, and Kuechly is now in the league's concussion protocol. Last year, Kuechly missed three games after suffering a concussion in week one against the Jags, and I believe that was a T.J. Yeldon hit that put him in the concussion protocol last year, right?
I think you're correct. Yeah,
I believe so. And this next one, not really so much football related, but DraftKings and FanDuel, the two largest daily fantasy football sports operators, have agreed to merge. The companies announced this morning. The merger is expected to close in the second half of next year. And until then, both sides will continue to operate as normal under their brand names. And sources close to negotiations told ESPN it's basically a 50-50 split between both FanDuel and DraftKings. So that kind of smells like a monopoly to me, but
yeah.
Moving on Monday, Bleacher Report reported that two unnamed Bears players said via text message that most of the locker room had given up on Jay Cutler, their quarterback. One of those players said that Cutler's lack of preparation before Chicago's 36-10 loss in Tampa Bay to the Bucks was, quote, truly embarrassing. Cutler was asked about losing the locker room in a teleconference with the media yesterday in Chicago and said, quote, unnamed source, I'm guessing. That could be a lot of people. That source could be a lot of people. It could be a made-up source. It could actually be guys in the locker room. If people actually start putting their names on it, then we can actually have a discussion about it. So Jay not too happy that he's being thrown under the bus for a poor lack of preparation, according to a couple teammates in Chicago. One final story here, guys. Vikings running back Adrian Peterson back doing some light running. He's still receiving treatment from his knee surgery back in September to repair a torn meniscus, and his timetable continues to be coming back middle of December, which, by the way, the Vikings visit Everbank December 11th.
All right, there you have it. Thank you, Tyler. As far as the Jay Cutler thing goes, I'm not one of these people that thinks the media, the evil media, is making up quotes. You know, I think there are enough guys, or think about it. If you are in a workplace with 52 other people, okay, 50, that you work with all the time, think they're all going to like you? Probably not. And if you are a guy that we can see the petulance on the face of Jay Cutler, we can see the bad body language. We hear guys on the record talk about issues that he's had in the past. So it's not a far leap to believe that he could be disliked or perceived as being not a leader in that locker room. But from Jay Cutler's standpoint, if somebody is going to make these comments about me, and they're not going to put their name on it. I don't have an issue with the reporting, because that's how reporting works. If there weren't anonymous sources, you wouldn't know about a lot of things that go on, because people fear for their jobs. They may not have the investment in them with the organization that the team has in Jay Cutler, for instance, in this particular case. But if I were him, I wouldn't. If you tell me that Jordan Howard says I've got a bad work ethic, just to name a random Chicago Bear, then I can deal with that. If you're going to say, here's some anonymous quotes saying that you've lost the locker room, this and that, how do you react to that? I wouldn't necessarily react to an anonymous quote about me either.
No, I mean, how can you? I mean,
well, I guess you could say,
eye,
you could say, I don't know who said that, but I don't agree with that sentiment. But I just think you're opening up a can of worms then for anybody to come at you with any accusation whatsoever.
Which is essentially what he did. He's like, if they want to put their name on it, we'll have a serious conversation about it. And maybe behind closed doors, those are the kind of things that in a locker room, you know, you have a team meeting about. And if someone needs to say something, they say it. And you can get it out in the open, that kind of thing. You usually don't want to air out that kind of laundry in public. That kind of way. So, look, we'll see. Everyone kind of feels like Jay Cutler's on his last legs in Chicago. It's seven more games that they have to deal with this kind of story. And then most likely scenario is that Jay Cutler's not the quarterback of the Bears next year. He'll be quarterbacking somewhere for somebody next year, because he's too talented for some team that's quarterback desperate to not take a chance on a guy like Jay Cutler. So we'll see how it all ends up, but it certainly sounds like it's winding down with the Bears.
It certainly does. All right, let's move along now to Nathaniel Hackett is where we'll start here first, as we'll get into some of what he had to say yesterday when he met with the media, and also hear a few cuts from the Gus Bradley show last night, which you catch every Thursday on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Starting with Nate Hackett, though, and talking about the success rate, we referenced it earlier. We had a conversation, you and I, with Dave Caldwell before the show began today, and one of the things he pointed out, and not in a defensive way, I wish everyone could have been privy to the conversation. Dave doesn't like to do a lot of radio during the season. He feels like, you know what, he's happy to come on in the offseason. His work has been put together, and that you can judge him by the play on the field and all that. But one thing he did point out was Blake was very successful on third down last week. Nathaniel Hackett talking about that theme.
Going into that game with Houston, they have a dynamic pass rush. Last time we had played them, it wasn't very pretty, so we wanted to make an emphasis on being able to protect Blake and let Blake feel comfortable that he could get to the wide receivers. And I think that we really had to ask a lot out of the tight ends and the running backs to really help us in that situation. And I think it gave Blake a little bit of comfort, let the wide receivers know we challenged them to have to win right away. They executed the plan almost perfectly.
Almost perfectly.
Yeah.
Got clipped right there. But they did. I mean, the success rate was there. Did you find a formula that's going to enable you to carry that forward? You still got to eliminate the big mistakes, but that doesn't mean there were no positives.
No, it doesn't mean there were no positives. They need to find a way to get that third down conversion rate in the running game going in one game and stop turning the ball over, and then maybe they'll win one. If they get all those things going at the same time. Nate Hackett, talking to the media yesterday morning, also asked about what he's learned about wide receiver Allen Robinson.
It's awesome working with him. All those wide receivers, I mean, they're such a hardworking group, and they love football. I mean, it's one of those things, they just always want to get better. They're always asking for things. They're really into any of the installs or any of the stuff we're putting in. I mean, they really get into it. And I think that's one of the things is, like, you kind of see it as just coaching the quarterbacks. But then when you're up there installing it and watching his interaction, I think that's the thing that really gets you excited, that he really loves the game.
All right, let's do this. Let's step aside here. We'll come back. I want to hear more from Nathaniel Hackett as it involves Marquise Lee. And I want to get into, Tony, the economics of keeping this team together moving forward. You know, I think they've had a plan out there, and you've already paid one wide receiver. You know you want to pay Allen Robinson big money. And can you afford to do that with three different guys? And what kind of contract would Marquise Lee command? He's got another year on his deal, as does Allen Robinson coming up next year. But you're going to have to deal with these things. I would think A-Rob, would attempt to deal with that situation by extending him this offseason if he's open to doing that in that time frame. So we'll get into that coming up. If you'd like to be a part of it, 641-1010 is the phone number. The question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, is simply to give us your keys to victory for the Jags versus the Lions. And a reminder, Tom Bush hooking up with Stellar, the firm that provides award-winning construction management, and they are going to make a significant donation next week to the Pace Center for Girls here on the First Coast as part of their commitment to giving back to the local community. And as well, their new dealership, the BMW dealership, should be completed in December and open for business in January. So we'll be looking forward to that coming up as well. They bring you the fan feedback question of the day daily here on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, more to do live at Everbank coming up on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field. If you bleed teal and black, then welcome home. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Georgia Bulldog football. Hear the dogs fight for the SEC East. Brought to you by Culhane's Irish Pub on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I mean, now that you've got the addition of Marquise with his juice, you know, he's got that X button, as we say. You can really get a little turbo boost there, which, you know, he's coming along. He's a guy that you want to spread the ball around to so many guys. And, I mean, all three of them have done a good job, and Marquise just gets better and better, and you just see him just keep growing every day.
Does the X button give you the turbo boost? I got to be honest with you. I haven't played Madden in ages, Tony. I thought R1. Was it not R1? Am I confusing myself? When's the last time you played Madden?
Man, I don't know. It's been years.
It's usually
Tyler Devitt.
It's usually
young
the,
kid.
The right trigger.
Yeah, right.
R2.
Like R1, right.
Yeah.
R1, R2, one of those right up there, right? The right trigger
button. Marquise
has
got the button, apparently.
Apparently he does. I think, what does X make you do? Jump or something like
might
that?
Maybe
spin?
Arm? I don't know.
Maybe. Nathaniel
Hackett. Jump, spin, or stiff
Nathaniel Hackett cannot coordinate my Madden offense, but he can coordinate the Jacksonville Jaguars offense. He does have the juice. I talked to Marquise a couple days ago. I think he's feeling great about where he is physically right now, which is a good thing. He feels great and hopes to continue the path that he's been on. Certainly like to visit the end zone some in the second half of the season, but you'll hear that conversation coming up on our pregame show this Sunday morning. I want to tie this all in together here. We're talking about Marquise Lee and how the Jags can keep this wide receiver core together under long-term contracts. But let's get into, before we have that discussion, here's some thoughts on Ben Koyak from Nate Hackett.
Ben Koyak's been really good in the run game, I think, and his combination with him and Mercedes, I think, has been something that has helped us in the run game. So I think it's one of those things, and his ability to run and catch, I mean, things that he's done in the past. But I think that just having 12 out there with him has really given us an advantage.
Okay, what about Koyak when he's the only tight end in the game for the Jags?
You know, all those guys. I mean, even with Neil, I mean, you get Julius, you get Mercedes, you get Ben. I mean, it's funny because when you're making a plan together, there's just so many different guys that you want to get the ball to, so many different guys that are playing at a high level, and you just want to keep on feeding them as much as you possibly can, and whoever's opportunity is, you want them to take advantage of it. And I think Ben did a great job in that because we started to really have to press it. We had to pass the ball a lot there in the fourth quarter, I think. That's kind of all we did, being down 2 scores. So, you know, when you have a lot of plays real fast, you got to kind of sub guys in and make sure that they're doing good. So I think Ben did a great job stepping up there.
Tony, we've kind of alluded to this a little bit this week. You know, the team has not used Julius Thomas heavily. It's certainly not the way he was used in Denver. And I get it. It was different circumstances. Peyton Manning was thrown for 55 touchdowns 1 year. So everybody was getting fat and happy. But does it come down to a question of if you're going to be able to retain Allen Hurns, who's under long-term contract? You certainly want to get a long-term deal done with Allen Robinson. I think they'd love to get a long-term deal done with Marquise Lee. I'm not saying immediately. I'm not saying it'll be this offseason. It could be a case where you know, they do it after his rookie contract runs out, whatever the case, but I think they want him around. Can you put that much money into the offensive skill positions if you're paying Julius Thomas what you're paying him? And then does their view of Ben Koyak and what he might turn into? Because Marcelle Lewis is not going to be around forever, right?
No.
I mean, not much longer, you wouldn't think, at an effective level of doing whatever he does out there on the field. do they see Koyak as the heir apparent, and how soon could he be ready for prime time? And will that have, you know, does that mesh with your decision on where you're going to allocate your money? Because I think it might. I mean, what you're – look, Julius Thomas, I'm not saying it's necessarily through any of his own fault, although he's had some drops. Blake hasn't played great football. Julius Thomas was never the road-grading blocker that you'd want in there, that you'd consider a complete tight end, but he's supposed to be a dynamic playmaker in space for this football team. And he's, for whatever set of circumstances, been underutilized in that capacity. Therefore, you're paying him more money than the return you're getting from him.
You are. I think, look, when you look at the usage for Julius Thomas, you look at snap counts for all these guys. Koyak's really spiked this week. He went up to 24 snaps this week. Julius Thomas has been around the same kind of number. It's down a little bit in the last 3 weeks than it was early in the season, but it's not down that much compared to where it was. I think it was interesting listening to Nate Hackett there talk about, look, when he took over, it sounded like there was a philosophical problem between Gus Bradley and Greg Olsen where they weren't running the football enough or effectively. They were abandoning it too early. I didn't feel like they abandoned the run Sunday. I felt like it got to a point in the game where it was a two-score game, and so they had to go straight with the pass. I think they had one pass or one run in their last two drives, the Jaguars did, which throws everything a little bit out of balance. They were a little more, bit more balanced than that in that game, and it sounds like Julius Thomas just doesn't give him anything in the run game. And so if they're going to be emphasizing trying to get the run game going, then that means guys that can help them in the run game are going to be on the football field, which means maybe Julius Thomas loses 10 snaps a game, which is basically what he's losing right now, and he seems to be losing it to Koyak. I think trying to figure out a way to hold on to, they've already paid Hearns. You expect them to pay Robinson this offseason, so if they're going to keep those two guys, figure out what they're going to do with Marquise Lee. One of the issues with having a team that went as young as the Jaguars did is everybody has to get paid at the same time, where you had to pay Hearns, you got to pay Robinson, you want to try to figure out a way now to probably keep Marquise Lee with the way that he's playing, because you don't want to let that kind of value just walk away if you can find some way to keep it. You have a decision to make on Blake Bortles sometime the next year, basically, as to what you're going to do with him, as far as do you extend him with a fifth-year option. All those things are about to be on the table for him. Telvin Smith, some of the young guys on defense, too, you're about to have to make decisions on contracts with all of these guys at the same time. It's not that they can't do it. It becomes a numbers-crunching game where if they let Julius Thomas walk, that frees up money for them to do all these other things with the young pieces that they feel like they may be building around if they're basically phasing Julius Thomas out of the offense already.
Right, and I don't know if they're consciously saying, hey, let's phase him out of the offense. It's more, as you said, let's commit to running the ball more, and then what personnel is most suitable to doing that. I think the even though you look at the snap counts, it's most noticeable when you see Koyak on the field to begin the football game.
No right? doubt.
And Julius Thomas is not out there. And then they're throwing the ball to Koyak early in the football game as well. So it's not just purely running plays that he's in on. Obviously, you don't want him only in on running plays, and you tip the defense in that circumstance. I just think when, you know, they've had a plan all along. And I know John Idzik has been a big part of this, putting together the vision for how the contracts will stack up. I think it's why they did Hearns when they could, which was early because he was an undrafted player. So yep. He was eligible for a contract extension earlier than these other guys. So you could get them a little bit off schedule, right? You get Hearns 1 year, then you do, maybe you do A-Rob this offseason, then maybe you wait and see if Marquise Lee can stay healthy for another full season. If he does, maybe you do something late in the year, next year, or after the season is done to lock him in and bring him back. But I do think, if you're going to be a team that wants to run the football, and look, who knows what the philosophy will be, because you may have a brand new coaching staff.
You certainly could.
It may be likely that you've got a new coaching staff in here. So they're going to have to do their own evaluation, and you may have a new general manager, quite frankly. We don't know, you know, what Shad Khan's thinking in that direction. So it's really tough to guess, but I don't think it's tough to see that, as you said, if you want Blake, even if you don't pick up the fifth-year option on Blake, if you try to go forward with him, you're going to have to give him a contract at some point. You're going to have to pay some quarterback more than you're paying Blake Bortles right now.
Yeah.
Right? So if that's the case, Are you able to pay all these offensive skill guys at the same time?
I don't know. And I think with Julius Thomas, maybe what you're seeing is a football team and a coaching staff, and this is about to probably really upset a bunch of fans when I say this, but maybe they brought him in and they challenged him that if you're going to stay on the field in Jacksonville, you have to be able to help us in the run game too. You know, and especially this season for the second half of this year, maybe they're sending a message to Julius that you're not a wide receiver. Like, and even if that's kind of the way that you played in Denver, we need more out of you than that here, especially for the money that they're spending on him. And I get it if you want to be upset about if that is what's going on. I'm not even sure that that's what's going on. But if it is, if you want to be upset about, well, why'd they spend that money on him if they're not just going to put him in the best position to succeed? I get it. But if they don't feel like they can be in the best position to succeed by putting him in the best position to succeed, they need to be able to run the ball. That's the way they feel in this stadium right now. And if Julius can't help them do that, and if they can't figure out some way to allow him to help them do that, then, yeah, they have to seriously consider letting him walk at this point.
All right, we'll go to the phones here, but I'll say this. I don't care what they're paying any of these guys now because none of it has impacted their ability to add more players. They're not in salary cap. We're projecting forward and looking at, can you keep a nucleus that you can maintain for a long period of time and be competitive? I get it. They haven't been competitive with this nucleus. I'm just trying to preempt all the negativity that's coming back when you say anything that may be deemed slightly positive these days. Let's start with Jay in Arlington this morning here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jay.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to weigh in on the three keys of victory. My first key is to bench Blake Bortles. My second key to victory is to also bench Blake Bortles. And in all seriousness, my third key to victory is to bench Blake Bortles. I would rather see anybody at quarterback right now than Bortles. I'll take Brucey from the longest yard over Bortles right now. It's embarrassing.
Okay. Point made. Sure. You're
not the only one.
You think it can't get worse. It can get worse. It can absolutely get worse. And you think you're probably right. There are probably a lot of people that echo that sentiment. You wouldn't be happy with some of the alternatives you could have at quarterback, in my opinion. But thank you for the call, Jay. Let's go up to Detroit. Mac, who called in yesterday, said he was heading up for the game, is now safely arrived at the Detroit airport. What's up, Mac? How are you?
Hey, not much, Michael. First, my app won't let me pick up the station, man. My app is out. But
what?
I'm live. Yeah, my app is out, man. I was trying to listen to the show, and my app is out.
It's terrible. It's terrible. It's probably a Verizon issue, but I can't be sure of that. So
you know what? But when I was talking to Jeff and Dan, I was on the plane. But now I'm sitting here by my luggage waiting on my ride, and here we go. But I swear to God, I'm here. And like I said before, I can't give you no X's and O's, but I haven't seen a Jaguars victory. In fact, I didn't even go to the 50-10 victory over the Colts because I couldn't make it because it was a medical issue. So I'm almost going on a year without seeing a Jaguars victory. But I'm gonna get it this Sunday, Mike. I'm gonna get it this Sunday.
And well, snap it, and Mac, what are you gonna do for the next 2 days in Detroit before the game?
Oh, visit family.
All right, that's cool, man. We'll have a good time with that and a little pre-Thanksgiving get-together, and hopefully you'll be the good luck charm making that trip all the way up to the Motor City. So good luck. We need it, Mac. Anything we can get.
Yeah, you're right. I'll call you Monday, Mike.
Sounds good, Mac. Have a good weekend, buddy, and work on that app. Man, those people get you, Tony, I tell you what. let's go to Matt on the south side next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Matt.
Mikey, how you guys doing today?
We're great. What's up?
I've been here going on 13 years, wanted to root for the team for a long, long time. Born and raised in Southern California, I'm a diehard Chargers fan, but doesn't mean I don't want to be able to get behind the Jags out here. And a guy that I'm wondering why nobody, I haven't really heard his name talked about too much, is a guy that I'd like to see stay in San Diego and see Mike McCoy fired, but would definitely not be opposed to seeing him come here is Ken Whisenhunt. Why is nobody talking about this guy as possibly being a head coach, which could possibly fix your quarterback, definitely upgrade whatever you're doing at the tight end position. You can see it just in the rookie that's showing up. I just don't understand. Why is nobody even mentioning Ken Whisenhunt?
I don't know. Tony and I are not talking about coaching candidates, period. So we're not mentioning Wisenhunt or anybody else. So there's no vacancy in Jacksonville at the time being. At the appropriate time, if there is one, we'll get into that, Tony. He was the head coach in Tennessee for a couple of years, you know, working with, I guess, Mariota last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And why'd they get rid of him? You know, Mariota seems to be thriving.
I don't know.
I don't either. You know,
he's a heck of an offensive coordinator in Arizona.
No, he was. And he's been an offensive coordinator in a lot of spots around the National Football League. I mean, I don't think it's I don't think it's crazy that Ken Wisenhunt will get some coaching interest out there if San Diego performs well in the second half of the season. They've had a lot of injuries to their offensive skill guys this year, but Melvin Gordon's running the ball well. Phillip Rivers doesn't seem to matter who he throws it to. He finds somebody to be productive with. I don't know, but if you're asking, I don't know who you're listening to in terms of head coaching candidates. So we have a lot of people call up and tell us Josh McDaniels is going to be the savior of the Jacksonville Jaguars, despite the fact that you have no idea if he'd be interested in coming here, and you're probably going to have to wait a good long time if New England makes a deep run into the postseason to even get the opportunity to speak with him, never mind be sure that he's going to take the job if there were a vacancy. So, you know, at the appropriate time, we'll consider all the candidates if there is a need to do that. Thank you for the call.
7 more weeks, guys.
7 more weeks.
Don't forget, Ken Wisenhunt was 3-20 in Tennessee and has a 40% winning percentage overall as a head coach. So he's not
That's probably why he's not getting talked about
a whole lot.
Sounds
glorious, winning 40% of your games.
Right. So you're really making a good case for it. He was the head coach of the Cardinals as well before not only offensive coordinator, but hey, you know, we'll see. He's got a couple of stops. You don't get the third chance too often in this league.
No, we'll see.
That's down the road. Thank you, Matt. All right, we got to take a time out here. We'll come back. Keys to victory. Is there any snark-free out there in terms of the responses that we
digging.
Got?
I'm digging. I don't think so.
Not too many, but we'll get into those when we return on the other side. Friday's always brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. We're live at Everbank with Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Last night on the Gus Bradley Show, Coach had a chance to talk about the surging Detroit Lions under quarterback Matt Stafford.
I just think they're playing very well. Their quarterback is really the key to their offense, and he's making good decisions for them. I think he's thrown 5 interceptions, but you can just tell the way he's playing right now. And when he can get on a roll, I mean, he is something to watch now. He makes really good plays for him, and he's got some threats on the perimeter to get the ball to.
This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today. From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, down the stretch we come on a Friday, brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. A reminder, don't wait until you need Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Come get your roof checked out. Have them stop by. They do a terrific job. You don't want to wait till the next hurricane rolls through. I've had several friends that experienced roof damage due to Hurricane Matthew, and Bob Roberts took great care of them. So check them out. 287-7756 is the number. 287-7756 for Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. License number CCC056797, our longtime Friday sponsor now of Jaguars Today. Just noting that Rob Gronkowski not practicing again. He's got either the perforated or the punctured or the non-damaged lung. I don't know which
Something's
one it
happening
is.
With his chest.
But he can't practice, and it was noted by the Boston Herald that it's been at least 8 years since any Patriot did not practice at all during the week and played for them. They travel out to San Fran this weekend, so you're likely looking at an alternative in your fantasy lineup this weekend. Speaking of which, you and I will leave here today and head over to the CW studios and record the Your Jacks Fantasy Football Show.
Yes, we will.
You can watch that tomorrow night at 11 or Sunday morning at 11:30 with some last-minute lineup advice there for you. Tony, the Tom Bush family of dealerships, as we mentioned, opening up a new BMW dealership in January and making a nice donation with their partner Stellar to the Pace Center for Girls. That's coming up next week as part of their giving back to the local community efforts. They present the question of the day, which every Friday asks you for your keys to victory. What did the Twitter sphere send us today?
Here's what we got from Daniel. Same as last 6 weeks. Number one, Blake. Number two, Blake. Number three, Blake. If he doesn't play better, the Jags have no chance. From Black Dog Express, my keys are to locate the quarterback Bortles that beat Louisville and Baylor in college. TJ and Ivory have to bust out and intercept Stafford. From Cameron, Lions fumble at the goal line. Stafford tears his ACL, and every Lions defender misses a tackle. Ugh, those are bleak. And from Brad, he's got it figured out exactly what's wrong with the offense. They need to sit Blake Bortles, they need to sit Gus Bradley, and they need to sit both running backs and let Grant get a carry. So it's that Corey Grant's got more involved.
That'll solve it. Just one carry for Corey Grant is what has been the formula they've been missing all along.
Yes.
On the Facebook page, there's a lot of people hoping that the Lions forget there's a game on Sunday, apparently.
I don't think that'll happen.
No. Kevin said the Lions forget it's game day. Number two, we're allowed to send the Patriots in our place. And did I already say that the Lions forget it's game day? Yes, you did. Dalton said set the offense up with a short field. Oh, this actually looks legit. Pressure Stafford and play your butts off for Telvin Smith. Chad, keep it tight. Take it to the limit. Steal the show. All right. Steven said Blake imitates an NFL quarterback. Then he said it two more times. So that was those were his three key to victory. Zachary just said.
A lot of confidence in Blake in this city right now.
Zachary just said, ha. How dare you ask that question? Josh says, win the turnover battle. Chris Ivory runs for over 100 and has at least a TD and have at least two explosive passing plays on offense. Hashtag Jaguars today. Thank you, Josh. Jorge Vargas or George Vargas, not sure how he pronounces it. It reminds me of my college roommate, George Saba, whose full name was Jorge Abram Saba Rodriguez Vargas Pena. That's what it was.
Whoa.
So there you have it. To this day, I haven't forgotten him and his six names. He said, the Lions don't show up for the game. Okay. Belichick debuts as Jaguars head coach. And Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott play for the Jags on Sunday and use that for community service. Why does Dak need community service? Is that did he do something wrong? I know Ezekiel Elliott's being
well,
at
Dak
least looked
the,
at.
Dak had the DUI or whatever.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
He did have the DUI. You're right.
But I thought that got dismissed or something.
Well, maybe he's got a community service angle to
remember.
It. I'm not sure. And then finally, Skyler said, offensively, don't turn it over. Defensively, force some turnovers. Hit the wide-open wide receiver, Blake Bortles. He said, BB6, I changed to 5-6 because Blake's pick sixes. It's a confident lot out there.
Oh, yes.
Fully behind the current quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Hey, I get it. He's struggled. I think he's the most, to me, he continues to be the easiest position to point to in terms of the single biggest reason why they haven't won games, because he hasn't been good enough. That doesn't mean his teammates have helped him enough. That doesn't mean he hasn't done some good things, but the bottom line is, you know, not many other positions can have the impact as a quarterback throwing a bad out route and getting it picked off and going to the house the other way for 6 points, and you lose the game by three. And you could do this over multiple games. It always doesn't come necessarily on the first possession of the game. It could not always be a pick six, but there's one or two or three or four glaringly bad plays that can be the difference in a game that comes down to single digits. The Lions play single-digit football games. As we talked about earlier with Michael Rothstein from ESPN, who covers them, they've trailed in every fourth quarter this year. Yet, they found a way to come back and win five of those games, including four of the last five. So they're a team that believes they're going to be able to get it done. Tony, I can't pick the Jags to go up into Detroit and win. Again, being the National Football League, seeing how close the Jags games are every week, I don't think they're going winless the rest of the way, so I'm not going to be stunned if they win this football game. But 27-17, something in that ballpark, 24-17.
Sounds about right.
I think the Lions win it.
Yeah. Look, I think the Lions have shown that they're probably going to give the Jaguars an opportunity in the second half of this game to potentially even win the thing. I mean, that's the type of football they played, and it really hadn't mattered what level of competition they've played to this point this year. That's kind of been the story. So play the streak where Detroit's going to give Jacksonville an opportunity. Detroit's found a way to win five of them and lost four of them against a team like Jacksonville. And the way they're playing football, it seems likely that Detroit's going to win the football game. So, yeah, I mean, somewhere in that range, 24 13, 24, 17. I mean, it feels like that type of football game. And hopefully the Jags make those couple of plays that have been difference makers in the last couple of weeks and don't turn the ball over. It would be the way how different the games would look and feel if they forced two turnovers as opposed to gave two turnovers would be unbelievable.
Even if they turned it over once or twice a game, if they at least balanced it out.
They just haven't had any of that, and it feels like all the big plays are going against them, and that's what happens to bad football teams. No one's saying that it's not. That's why you lose in this league. It's because the big plays keep going against you, and you may be putting yourself in position to make them, but if you're not making them, that's the bottom line. If they find a way to make them this week, yeah, they can beat Detroit.
Right. Don't wait for Detroit, as you said, to give you an opportunity to beat them. Go take it. Go make an opportunity. And I think the way you do that is by creating turnovers. I don't know if I can expect that to happen after five consecutive weeks. You almost feel like the dam's got to break at some point. And just out of dumb luck, a tip ball go their way. Someone will lay one
on
the ground.
Please land in Telvin's hands this week.
Wouldn't that be fantastic? And let him take it back the other way. Continue to wish the best for he and his family. But he was here today for meetings and walkthrough for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I'm expecting to see Telvin Smith on the field this weekend. And hopefully he can channel his emotions into some positive play and the rest of his teammates follow suit. All right, that does it for us today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of the program, not only today, but all week long. Thanks to Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, our Friday sponsor. Appreciate Michael Rothstein of ESPN and their NFL Nation coverage of the Detroit Lions jumping on board with us today. And for all our hosts this week that joined us, for all of our listeners and callers out there, we appreciate all of you, the texters, the tweeters, the Facebookers. I appreciate most of you. Let's just be brutally honest. I appreciate most of you. For Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, for Donna Murphy, who popped in earlier today as well, and for Tony Smith, I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping things up for another week on Jaguars today. 2 days away from game day. Let's wipe the slate clean. Let's try to get a W on Sunday. The Midday Chalk is coming up next, so keep it right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You can't have a newcomer come in and steal the show.
You guys have a good day. Peace.